So today we're not going to talk about Merubah or the Gemara yet in the seventh parak. We'll do kind of an introduction to Geneva and Gezeila, right, theft in general, and then we'll figure out how to attack the parak, starting probably next week. So the first source that I gave you today was a passage from Emunos Vedeos, which is kind of, I guess, the first philosophical, the Rambam would disagree, but we could say the first, you know, like a well-known Jewish philosophic work by Rav Sadia Gaon. And in there he has a passage which I want to kind of take on. Rav Sadia Gaon is talking about Tamei HaMitzvos, and he takes up a position which actually both the Rambam and the Ramban, there's a case where the Rambam and the Ramban agree, both of them don't like Rav Sadia Gaon's approach very much, but nonetheless he kind of gives them a foundation for what they do. What Rav Sadia Gaon does is in the beginning of the third chapter of his book, is he argues for a fundamental distinction between two different types of mitzvos. He calls them the mitzvos sichlios and the mitzvos shimios. You have the mitzvos which could have been you know, deducted through reason, and you have the mitzvos which reason never would have given to us, right? If I didn't have Matan Torah, I never would have known about Shofar, Yom Kippur, or Lulav and Esrog. And so those are the mitzvos which are independent of reason, just, you know, they're exhibitions of the divine will, which he says perhaps have some rationale, but those are the two different categories of mitzvos that he proposes. And people have been, like, you know, seeing if his distinction really holds up. Does he really mean it? It seems like he really meant it. It's unclear if it really holds up. And the Rambam and the Ramban both disagree. They say, no, there's one category of mitzvos. They think all mitzvos have rationale. Some it's easier to discover. Some it's more difficult to discover. But Rav Sadia, so once he has his two categories, his mitzvos sichlios, right, which you could have acquired through reason independent of revelation, so he asks the kind of obvious question on himself, which is, right, so why do I need revelation to give us these mitzvos, right? So the first one I think he talks about is murder, and the second one he talks about is theft. And I kind of want to use his position as like a, not so much a straw man, but a position to set up to see why we're going to go in a bit of a different direction going forward, and that's going to color our analysis of Geneva and Gezeila throughout the entire parak, the entire limud this year. So Rasag says, right, if I didn't have revelation, I still could have figured out that theft is problematic. Why? Because he says very simply, if theft was legal, then everyone would steal, and nobody would be able to have any property of their own, and ultimately even theft would become impossible, right? Because everyone would just be stealing from each other, and you know, the whole concept of private property would be destroyed. And then he says that Sheves HaOlam would be impossible as well. So clearly Rasago is not a Marxist, right? Because, you know, he's saying, well, of course it's a muvan meilav that theft is prohibited, because otherwise, you know, we'd have no private property. So he's assuming that's a virtue. And he also says, right, that the entire institution of Sheves HaOlam, right, building the world would be impossible if theft was legal. Therefore, it must be that theft is prohibited. Kind of parenthetically, when we'll talk about the, you know, Sekhman Bracious a little bit later on, but the argument that legalized theft will lead to the destruction of the world kind of gives us an interesting take on the Mabel. Right, if in fact the flood was right, Hashem decides to destroy the world after you know, theft of all different sorts is completely rampant and legal, right? So Rasag might say, well, yeah, this is kind of the natural result anyway. Right? This is where the world was going. The world was going to an impossibility of Sheves, and so Hashem just kind of, you know, stepped in and hit the restart button. Anyway, so Rasag is telling us that, right, without revelation, I would have known that theft is prohibited. So that's going to open up the question, why do I need the Torah to tell me not to steal? So the answer that Rasag gives is, well, I know that private property needs a, you know, protection against theft, but I don't know how you acquire private property. Right, he says, without Matan Torah, I wouldn't know how kinyanim occur. We have all sorts of different ways of acquiring property. Right, you have hagbah, you have meshicha, you have mesira, kinyan chatzer, kinyan agav, kinyan chalipin. Right, there are many types of ways of acquiring property. I wouldn't know how I acquire the property that then can't be stolen without Matan Torah telling me that front of you know, that part of the law. Which is a very surprising answer in a couple of different ways, right? I mean, first of all, like, I would have thought, no, the chiddush isn't how you acquire property. The chiddush is how exactly do you steal? I mean, we're going to spend the entire the entire year analyzing theft. It's a very complicated area of halacha. What's considered theft? What kind of theft are we talking about? What are the ramifications of theft? None of that I would have known directly from reason. But beyond that, beyond just the fact that we think that from a rational perspective, theft is prohibited, the Torah clearly takes a very kind of extremely strong stance on theft, one which I'm going to argue we never would have had without Matan Torah. Just for starters, how many mitzvos can we come up with which are not even theft-related? How many mitzvos can we come up with which are part of theft? Right, they talk about the Eskimos with, I mean, it's a myth, but apparently, but like, the Eskimos are supposed to have all the words for snow, so halacha's got various terms for different kinds of theft. Let's just throw out a few here.
Words or different kinds of
mitzvahs? Either one. They kind of go together. Gneiv and gzeila. They're saying gneiv and gzeila.
One is privately done, a work done in.
Okay, so now we're getting two different topics. So we'll take Adam's first, take Jacob's second. Right. So the first point is we have Geneva and Gzela. One is stealing in private, one is stealing in public. We'll see to what extent that definition holds up over the course of the year. Right. And we know the idea that the Torah takes a stronger stance against stealing in private because right there you're showing disrespect to God because you're showing no fear of God, but you are showing fear of man. But in the English language, we don't have we call it all stealing. Right. We call it all theft. But in halacha, there's a firm distinction between geneva on the one hand and gezela on the other hand. Very good. Even within the world of geneva, we have different things that we call geneva, right? Exactly. Okay, so now we got mitzvah number three, right? Kidnapping. Kidnapping is called genevas nefashos. And we'll talk later on about the relationship between stealing money and stealing people. So great, that's three. Any others? Mila, awesome. I should have put that on the list, right? Stealing from... Number 12, stealing from Hektish. Yeah, very good. Okay. Shlichus Yad. Okay, a type, very good, right? That's a permutation of theft, right? A case where it was brought into your possession, right? You're watching the object that's brought into your possession, and now you take it for your own use. Okay, very good. That's actually related to mitzvah number 4, now that we've got Mila on the record, which is Oshek. Right, Oshek, where you don't seize the object for yourself. The object there are two ways to define Oshek. I could define Oshek as the object is brought in my possession and then I keep it. Or Oshek could be about debts, right, where I incur, not that I'm stealing your physical object, but that I'm stealing your debt. That's a separate mitzvah, a separate concept, so we've got four. Any more? Sorry? Exactly. Okay, fine. That's excellent. Batalin. That's related to Oshek, right? We're going to see that's a part of Oshek, right? And a special case of withholding the wages from the worker. Withholding the wages from the worker is a fascinating overlap between Oshek and regular Gezel. Actually, halacha is that you violated both. We'll see why that's true. Okay, very good.
Lo tachmod.
Lo tachmod. Okay, nice. Sorry, we're in the Ten Commandments, right? So we had kidnapping. No, lo tachmod. What's the translation of lo tachmod? Okay, do not covet. So there are two different mitzvahs, right? In Ves Chanan, we have Lo Tachmod and we have Lo Titaveh. What's the difference between the two? Yeah, huge machloka. So let's start with the Rambam because he's going to stay probably back today. I don't know. Navi?
There are manas only if you follow up on Lo that one is inherent.
Excellent. Excellent. Lo tzedaveh is just the craving of the object. Lo tachmod is you crave the object to the point where you take the object. We probably won't talk about it today, but the psukim and micha that I gave you guys at the end, right there he's talking about the relationship between lo tachmod and lo tegzol explicitly. Okay, so we've got gzela, gneva, oshek, me'ila, lo tachmod, lo tzedaveh, and kidnapping. Any more? Very good. Hasagas gvul, right? Moving the border stone of your fellow's field. Halacha is if you do that, you have violated. It's another twofer, right? It's similar to the case of lo talin, right? This is a twofer. You have just violated lo tignov or lo tigzol, depending on if you did it brazenly or in private, and you have violated hasagas gvul. if this is in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so now that's 8 mitzvahs we got. Any more?
Weights and measures.
Weights and measures. Excellent. There are 2 mitzvahs of weights and measures. Number one, you can't have you can't use weights and measures, and we have like a bayira bayimatze, right? You can't even own them in your possession, right? So you got to keep the weights and measures clean. And the Rambam again says, right, if you use those, you have violated gneva, right? So that's at least 9, 10, because that's kind of a double mitzvah. Any more? Nezek, okay, excellent, excellent one. Nezek, let's put Nezek off to the side for now, but keep that in mind. Nezek, awesome. Rabbeinu Yonah thinks that that Nezek is Aser Mishum Gezel. So let's okay. So we got 9.5. Any more?
Ribis in a way.
What?
Ribis in a way.
Ribis, very good. Yeah, the Gemara says that there are 2 mitzvos. So once I had both of these, maybe I wouldn't need a special mitzvah for Gzela, because I could have derived it from these 2 mitzvos. One is ribis, which has 3 mitzvos, right? No ribis for the lender, for the borrower, and for anybody involved tangentially in the case. And the other mitzvah that the Gemara talks about in the context of ribis, and we know, I wouldn't know if I hadn't learned last week, onah, right? And we have 3 different types. We have different types of onah, right? There's onas mamon, onas dvarim. Basically, you can't rip people off, right? That's also it's in here, right? It's another form of theft. So that's 11. Do I have any more? Okay, great. We got mitzvah saseh of returning the gzeila. You know what? Lo yacher schar sachir is actually its own mitzvah. So great, right? Withholding wages is its own mitzvah. That's my list for now, right? So we've got about a dozen different mitzvos, and we could probably come up with more. A dozen different concepts, and about 15 different mitzvos that are all part of theft. So this is surprising. I mean, we take it for granted because, like, we just know these halachas are out there. But like, why isn't there just a mitzvah you can't steal? We've got this huge multiplication of concepts of mitzvos, some of which seem like they overlap, some of which actually overlap, right? There are cases where you're getting twofers, and some of which just seem unnecessary, right? I could have had one, put into the category of the other. There are some Rishonim who are learning Geneva from Gzela, and some Rishonim are saying you could learn Gzela from Geneva. So the sheer multiplicity of mitzvos kind of militates against the perspective that, Rasag was kind of giving us, which is, well, I could have learned theft from just reason alone, and I need revelation to teach me things tangentially, right? The Torah seems to be taking up a strong stance just from the perspective of the number of mitzvahs we've got going on. If you look in the Pesukim, which we'll see, right, so that we're kind of going to break up this year, and there are 2 different goals we're going to have in this year. One goal is to kind of highlight the Torah Shebichsav perspective of the stringency of theft in a couple of different ways. We'll kind of foreshadow some of the Dinim and Torah Shalpeh, and also we just need to have like a basic background. One, by the way, a challenge we'll have learning the Masechta is there are all sorts of, it all kind of comes to you at once, right? You do Merubah, and there are 2 Blot, which are just Pesukim, and then it's just all coming at you all at the same time. So we're going to need to start the Limud with like a working background of a few different concepts, and that's why we just had those Pesukim from like Vayikra and Shemos, just to get some of the concepts of Kifel and Dal Vehei and Chomesh and whatnot on the record. Okay, so point number one for the kind of unique chumrah, Torah stringency attitude towards theft we have from the number of mitzvahs, right? So you look at the pasuk in Yeshaya, right, source number 1 on the sheet, and you've got Yeshaya, great, quoted from Hashem, Ki ani Hashem ohev mishpat, sone gezel be'ola, right? So we've got a contrast, right? First of all, Hashem is saying, I love mishpat, and Hashem is saying, I hate gezel. So gezel, right, Hashem is saying sone gezel, so that's a strong stance right there. Number 2, gezel is being clashed with mishpat. Right, what's the opposite of mishpat? Here we're saying gezel. Right, so those two.
Gezel.
What?
This isn't all gezel. It's a gezel
ba'ola. Okay, very good. The pasuk says sone gezel ba'ola. So why is the pasuk singling out sone gezel ba'ola? So the Tanchuma and the Mefarshim say, right, Hashem is saying I hate gezel, even if it's brought as an Ola, right? In other words, you shouldn't be stealing at all. And don't think like the Greeks do that you can if you sacrifice some of the stolen stuff to me, it'll make it all better, right? I hate theft across the board. Is how the Tanhuma interprets the passage. Very good.
You're the other way around.
Hmm?
You're the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
That is
more
case.
You could, but then why would he say, "Oh, hey, Mishpat"?
Maybe the opposite of Mishpat is Gozal Ola, but not Gozal Spat.
Do you think so?
I mean, from reading the text, you could say that. I mean,
you could. I just don't think that it's. I think it's a less reasonable interpretation, right?
Taking credit for somebody else's work. So Mishpat, the problem is you're taking credit for the wrong group. Mishpat is giving justice in the sense of attributing credit to people who deserve it. And so
they get
the role is taking credit for your
corban,
which isn't your
corban. Okay, but that's a stand-in for theft in general. It's the description you're giving.
No, I'm taking credit for something, it's not something I'm stealing.
Taking... I don't know.
We're not clear what Mishpat is. It could be Mishpat, because that's also divine. It's between man and Hashem. So that could be parallel to this when it goes above the specific.
I guess. I mean, Mishpat in general, we think in general of Mishpat as just justice, right? I mean, when Hashem says, "Oh, Mishpat," he's not telling you, "Be just with me," right? You're not supposed to be just with God. I mean, you are, I guess, but like the mitzvah of, you know, tzedek tzedek terdof is a ben adam lechaveiro concept, right? Okay, fine. Just go 1 second. Okay, if you skip to the bottom, just kind of like bolstering this stance, right? So go to the very bottom of the sheet. I put the second from Habakkuk on the bottom because that's kind of the way I did it when I was preparing. But the truth is, it belongs up here. Habakkuk is complaining to Hashem, right? He's saying, "I am seeing everything that Malchus Bavel is gonna do / is doing to Bnei Yisrael." And Hashem's not doing anything about it, right? Bavel kind of gradually extends its dominion over Bnei Yisrael over a couple of kingships, right? It's Chizkiyah at first brings them in, you know, welcomingly, and then they gradually extend their dominion from Yehoyakim on, and then, you know, ending in total disaster. So Habakkuk is complaining. He's saying, right, the Babylonians are doing all these terrible things, and Hashem is not doing anything about it. But what's kind of surprising is that Habakkuk singles out one thing that the Babylonians do. And that is that they steal. And he could have singled out all sorts of things, right? I mean, Babylonians do a lot of murder, right? Nivu Zaradan, and, the Chorban, Galas, there are all sorts of things that he could have said to Hashem, "I can't believe that the Babylonians get away with this." But what he consistently says, "I can't believe that they get away with," is theft, right? These guys are, their hallmark is plunder. Right, in Masudas Tavit has a line where he says, you know, unlike like Rome, for example, unlike the countries like Rome, which go to war for honor, right? Bavel just goes to war for theft. Right, and Habakkuk says that this has had a devastating impact on Mishpat. Right, the proliferation of their Hamas, right, of their theft, has led to in Pasuk Dalet, right, Al Kein Yitzei Mishpat Mi'ukal, and then he continues on. Pasuk Tes, right? Kulo lechamas yavo, magamas penehem kedima, right? All they do is they come for, they come to steal. Pasuk Vav, right? This is a nation which comes for stuff that's low, right? Their motivation is to get stuff that does not belong to them. And then, right, Habakkuk, after complaining about their plundering, turns to Shem, and this is Pasuk that Luchasin left to quote, right? Pasuk Yigimel in Parak Aleph here, right? He turns to Shem and he says, Tohore Naim era osra, Vehebit el amal lo sucha, right? So Hashem is Tahor Einayim and is not able to look, right? Hashem is not able to countenance corruption, right? So how can Hashem let the Babylonians get away with their theft? Again, right? I would have had in here shvichas dam. I would have had in here avodah zarah. Right? I would have had in here, you know, rape and murder and who knows what. Habakkuk singles out theft, and in Parak Beis, when Hashem answers Habakkuk, he still is talking about theft primarily, right? You know, Hashem says back to Habakkuk, you know, don't worry. Actually, Habakkuk here has the line of, you know, Al Pi Shi Sameya, right? It may be delayed, but don't worry. You know, their comeuppance is going to come. And eventually people will devise sayings about Nebuchadnezzar, the folly he had for trying to get ahead by stealing so much. So, you know, we're setting up Gneva as something kind of uniquely problematic, even in a field where we could have complained about other seemingly more problematic Averis. So let's put that on the table. Okay. So now let's kind of shift gears a little bit and just try to get some working background, right? We've all got to see these psukim if we're going to approach Vava Kama and Perek Merubah, so we might as well see them together, and then we'll delve back into a couple of other facets, try to pin down some details of how problematic and awful Torah thinks that theft is. Okay, so where does the prohibition for theft appear? Okay, great. So you could have given a bunch of answers, but source number two in the sheet works as well as any, right? So there are three different mitzvos, at least three different mitzvos of theft, which appear in Vayikra Yutes through Yudal Yigimel, and those are in Pasuk Yudal if we have Lo Tignovu, right, and then in Pasuk Yigimel we have Lo Sashok Esrayacha and Lo Sigzol, right? So Gzela and Geneva are being presented as separate mitzvos. They're even separated in the pasuk, right? We have an intervening pasuk warning not to swear falsely in God's name. The pasuk calls that Chil Hashem. Keep that in mind. It's going to be important later. Right? And the pasuk is also linking Lo Tashok, right, to Lo Tigzol. Right, those two pesukim are being put together in Pasuk Gimel, and Geneva is being set apart a little bit in Pasuk Yudalev. So these are the pesukim we've got to know. The source is in Parakeh, in source number three. This is talking about the Asham Gzelos, right? Someone who steals and then swears denying he stole, and it turns out he lied, right? So he pays, he's got to return the object. There also is a dual penalty involved here, right? Dual penalty being, number one, he's got to bring a karban asham. Number two, he has to give a chomesh, right? He's got to give the 1/5 penalty to the owner of the object. A couple of interesting things here. Number one, it's not so often in halacha we have a double knas. I can't offhand think of any other case where we give you two different penalties for one action. Right? But this guy's both bringing a karban and he's giving a penalty. There's one other case, which is like the exact same, which is the Asham Me'ilos, right? The Asham Me'ila and the Asham Gzela have an awful lot in common. Both are brought for, one for using Hekdesh, one for stealing someone's stuff. And then the Asham Me'ilos, you bring an Asham and you give a 1/5 penalty to the Beis HaMikdash. Here you bring a Karban and you give a 1/5 penalty to the owner. So, look, the comparison between stealing from the Beis HaMikdash and stealing from people is interesting and not obvious. The multiplicity of penalties is interesting and not obvious. And even the fact that this guy is giving an asham, right? There's clearly not just a ben adam lechaveiro problem here. He has to bring a carbon for what he has done. Fine. So those are the psukim in source number two. Yep.
From Baker Hayes, it's obvious that the Torah's description or the chait itself, or even the where you're paying back, is because you stole, and that's because you swear falsely.
So
So
you could say that, but then why, if someone swears falsely about owing a debt, do they not have to, right?
Only be included within
within
the general Torah example of
Stealing
this pretty large number of examples.
Okay, but the way we're passing it's not.
Okay, but I'm saying from the Torah, from the Torah, I wouldn't conclude from here that Gzela itself is the punishment.
I disagree with you. It's actually not true. Pasuk Chaf Beis, he says, "Call me, Kolasher Yasa Adam Lachto Bahina." These. What is the these?
Ki Cheshba Mitel
BePikadon. Right? So all these are...
That's the whole problem.
Yeah, but you're kicheh shenishba on what?
On a type of theft,
exactly. Okay.
No, but I'm saying, but the point, the problem is that you denied it. If you had just returned it, you're fine. Or you admitted it.
100%. You've compounded your error by denying. But it has to be...
compounded. I'm not saying who said compounded.
Because it has to be gezeila to begin with.
Okay, but that's just a question of the criteria. That's not a question of the problem.
Why isn't denying a debt in here? Why isn't Geneva in here? Geneva's not in here. It's not
one
of the examples. Bahina of the above listed things. And then we double up. We double up in Pasach of Gimel. Gazal, Ashak, Pigadon, Aveda.
And then Chataro, Mikol Asher Yishav.
Okay. And I mean I don't know how we what the Sifra does that Pasach, but there's no the other things aren't mentioned. We don't paskin it anywhere in Tosh Lafet, so I'm just not bothered by the I'm talking about the question. Like,
I mean, I'm not going to deny the torso without just saying torsion.
I understand, but even in there, it's not not a good problem.
So the punishment listed in Kaftel is related to stealing specifically?
Yeah, if you steal and then swear falsely regarding the theft.
Yeah, meaning like specifically the swearing is about theft and not other...
Correct. Okay. Right, so that's just basic background. Point number two. Okay. Yeah.
It sounds like the types of punishments are gone. Like you have the knas, which is going to the guy. You've got the korban, which is obviously going to Hashem.
Right.
The degrees of punishments that we see throughout these sukkim, like, don't necessarily, like, especially once you get to the mepharshim for the arba rabbim mishnah, do not seem to be related directly to the type of to the damage you're necessarily doing to their person. They could have like multiple, especially when you compare to name and gazela. I guess it makes sense that it's sort of like everything is sort of directed towards God. The degree of punishment that you're receiving, like the fact that you're giving the extra korban, or the case of Gnela and found your hand, you have to give kefil. Those aren't, the knas there is not necessarily seen as a, like the extra knas is not necessarily seen as like some sort of form of payback, but rather some sort of like knas to God. I think that especially works with this, like when you have chomesh as opposed to something else, because chomesh is like all, at least I understood it as sort of like a classic understanding of like just an appreciating value, that chomesh is not necessarily like chomesh is not necessarily knas in itself, but rather you're like if you're holding onto an object for a certain amount of time. Like, you're giving a homage for the amount of time that you had it for.
Uh-huh. I mean, that idea is raised by some of the Mepharshim regarding why you pay more for the cow than for the sheep, because you're compensating for the lost labor in the interim.
Yeah, that's one idea, the other idea is the embarrassment of the inaction, which doesn't necessarily have, like, the... It doesn't have the same better than the chaver component to it, but it seems to be more like better than the makom.
Wait, the Mepharshim?
So, do you have a question? Is there a problem?
I guess a little bit of both.
Okay.
The Mepharshim, I realize, maybe it's the Mepharshim, but they don't talk about like the value of lost labor within the time of having it. Right, they just talk about it being a more productive animal in general. I mean, that somehow it's worth more, but that it's not about the time lost, or else there would be a factor of how long you had it for.
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem we'll have to deal with in general. But I thought that's what the Ibn Ezra was saying. He was saying that the reason why you pay more for the cow, the five times versus four times, is because
the opportunity cost.
Yeah, the opportunity cost, exactly. I don't know. Look, that's okay. That's kind of running into one of the major themes we'll deal with in the actual Masechta, which is who actually owns the object, you know, post theft, right? You know, can the thief be penalized for opportunity costs if the thief is now the owner of the object? It's something we'll have to deal with in depth.
if I guess I could boil down the question to one sentence, like what's driving the like the punishment, like the element of it or the enough of it?
So I would argue both. And then that's why you've got... It's complicated because you've got a shvua, and a shvua is obviously a bin adon l'chaveh l'makom because you've just taken God's name in vain. But I think the theft itself is an attack on both. It's an attack on the, you know, tahari na'amir osra, and it's an attack on the person. We'll see to what extent an attack on the person when we talk about kidnapping.
And does that directly affect the direction of the payment?
Well, the money's certainly going to the owner.
Yeah, but I'm saying if the distinction between the four between Neva and Gazela, Neva, you're paying double. Like what's causing that? Like if the extra issue might be, I don't know if it is, might be a better Lemakom type issue, why is it then driving the money towards giving a guy, as opposed to here where I guess that extra sin, the extra. Negligence towards God's sovereignty leads directly to the payment for me.
Well, you're paying the owner as well.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a difference in the commission. Like there's significant difference in the commission gave. Like I'm trying to.
Well, but that's. I mean, we like the Gemara will talk about why the penalty for the ganav is more that we know. Right, the penalty of the ganav versus the penalty of the gazlan, that's the famous idea of, right, the ganav stealing in secret and the gazlan stealing
exactly.
In public, okay.
Exactly, that actual penalty is coming from a lemakom type recognition.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, think about that, okay. Anyone else?
You don't think it's significant, I don't think there's any significance fact that, like, all these persons have a very strong element of, like, Kasha and
Shvua
Sheker, like one Shmo, the one Raker, and both
Rakers actually. 100% I do. I don't think that Shvua Sheker. I don't think Shvua Sheker is totally unrelated to Gneva at all. But I didn't want to get into that because we're talking about Gneva, not talking about Shvua Sheker. Remember, we had the pasuk just a second ago on Vaker that put Shvua Sheker smack in between Gneva and Gazela. We're going
to
see Psukim coming ahead, which reinforced that as well.
You're wording it.
Okay, so in other words, you want to argue that the Shvua Sheker has kind of reinforced the Gneva? Or the problem with one is the...
Yeah, or...
You double down your Gneva? I agree, okay.
Isn't there a specific type of Shvua Sheker in this context? No? That of denying the Gudela?
As opposed to what?
As opposed to Shvua Sheker branding. Is that what Chomer says?
Right. Right.
The Shvua Sheker is part of that, right?
Correct. If
so
you.
Is that the Shvua Sheker?
Yeah. Oh, is that the Shvua Sheker in Vayikra? Are you saying?
Like this is part of the Gazela process.
In source number two?
In source number whatever it is,
three. Source number three. Yeah, the Shvua in source number three is part of the Gazela. Right, you stole it, you swore falsely. And Yoni's saying that you've kind of compounded your theft by stealing by swearing falsely about it. It's like
right,
a re.
It's not like a separate thing. Part of
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the problem? No. The problem
you have there? I'm just reinforcing my earlier point that I think the Torah should probably dichtav is saying more than just Zela. I think the whole point that there's or Gneva it's more a lot more about the Shua.
Okay, so I would take your argument.
Moshe's trying to argue.
I would take your argument. Yeah, exactly. I think Moshe and I are taking your argument the exact opposite direction, which is that. The stealing falsely has compounded the theft problem. Now it's not that the real problem is Shvua Sheker and these are just Hechi Timsis to get there. The problem is the theft, and you've like reinforced all the problems of the theft by then swearing falsely about it. But I mean sorry 9:30, so let's go on if it's okay. I mean we can talk more about it later. Because we've still got a lot to do in half an hour. Okay. Let's jump in. Fine. So, source number four. Source number four. So over here, we got the Pesukim which teach us that if you steal in private, so you have to pay double. And if you steal sheep or cattle, you pay four or five times the price. So first of all, just again on the Knas level, let's not take this for granted. Like, this is, we have nothing in halacha comparable to the idea of paying four or five times, right? When we dealt, you know, last year when we learned Sanhedrin, and we talked about Moshe Shemra, right? The Moshe Shemra, the case of the husband who falsely accuses his wife of committing adultery while they were in the Erison stage. And we talked about the unique stringencies in that area where he both gets, you know, it's the one case in Halacha where he's loke umeshalim, the betrayal of the husband, even though there should be a lav shema ma'isa, just the betrayal itself, gets him whipped and gets him paying 100 shekel, which we said was a double penalty because he owes her the 50 shekel, which is the value of her ksuba. And that's why that's what gets paid in the case of rape and seduction. Moshe Shemra is paying double, right? Some of the first one we're saying. He's giving her double compensation for the ksuba he tried to steal. So if that's what's going on, an ultimate betrayal of Moshe Shemra, you're paying a double penalty. So here in Gnema, as a baseline, we're taking a double penalty, and we're taking it up to even four or five times, right? So just, again, the sheer numbers of the Knas are certainly telling us something. It's good to be familiar with these psukim because these are the psukim which the Gemara for the first two blot of Meruba became very good friends with. And we also see in these psukim the concept of Bab Machtaras. So you guys know Bab Machtaras, the thief who digs underground and tries to break into house and steals. And you can kill him. Perhaps you should kill him. Perhaps he's Chayef Misa. I'd love to talk about that a little bit more today, but I don't know if we'll have the time. Just for now, just take note that the Torah treats the Bab Machtaras as a primary ganav. Like this guy is a thief who's going to be killed. So just keep that in mind. Okay, so those are basically the main psukim in Chumash when it comes to Gneva and Gezeila. Source number 5. This is the pasuk of Hasagas Gvul. Right, we talk about that mitzvah. Not to move the boundary stone. Rashi says that you get two lavin for this, right? The lav of regular gzela and the lav of hasagas gvul, as we talked about. Source number 6. Over here we have some psukim about lotasho, right? You can't withhold stuff from those whom it belongs to. A prime example in the psukim is withholding money from the laborer. And included in there as well is withholding stuff that belongs to the poor, the destitute, your brother, the convert, right, the widow, the orphan. I think they show up in here too, not to show up elsewhere, right? So not, you know, taking advantage of the vulnerable is showing up in here as well. Source number 7, Rashbam quoted that, right? Again, this is like a prime source of Baltashok. Right, we're linking those who are withholding the wages of the laborer to those who are being Oshik, the Almana, Yasom, and Mate Ger, right? The widow, the orphan, and the tribes of Kamitz. Okay, so that's our basic Torah Shebichsav introduction to all the halachas. We're going to see halachas of Kefel, you know what it is. Now, Dalvehe, you know what that is. If I do Geneva on your sheep or on your cow, and then I slaughter or sell it. The Chomesh for Gzela, now we know what that is. And we've seen some of the various mitzvahs of Gneva and Gezeila. Okay, so now we can jump for the next 25 minutes into some of the fun stuff that I want to argue. Okay, so back to the argument that theft is, right, we're countering Rasag, and we're trying to say that theft is more than just a, you know, law that has to be there for the sake of settling civilization, right? What's really interesting is in some of the psukim, it seems like theft becomes kind of the dictionary definition of a rasha, right? Who is the rasha? The thief. Where am I getting that from? So first, we've got source number 8. So recognize these psukim, and so do I, because they're from Parshas Nah. And right, so when the people went, right, the generation of the flood is going downhill, and what does the Torah say? Right, the world is filled of chamas. What chamas is going on in the generation of the flood? Just brief reminders. What are people doing? What's the chamas here? Stealing. What are they stealing? What? They're stealing money and they're stealing people's wives, right? And those two are being linked, right? Adultery is being called chamas as being called Chamas as well. And Hashem says to Noach, right, that I'm destroying the world because it is full. It is full of Chamas, right? Rashi calls Chamas Geza, Unkelis calls Chamas Chatfin, right? It's full of snatchers. And Ibn Ezra says, Gezel, Oshek, and Lekichas, Eshes, Chavero. Okay, fine. Ramban says, why is theft so bad? So first of all, like Rav Sag, they should have known better, right? Theft is a rational mitzvah. And second of all, theft is Ra, Lemakom, and Ra, Lebrios. It's bad to God, bad to people. Okay, but we see from here, Chamas referring to theft. Imkenim and Dvarim, so look at source number 9, number 10, and this becomes very interesting. The Pesukim here are warning about these are the sources for the Psul Rasha, right? Someone who is halachically categorized as a Rasha is invalid for testimony. We derive that from Pasuk Tet, from Pasuk in source number 9, and from the Pasuk in source number 10, which is in the context of Edom Zomim. And in each case, we call the aid as the Rasha, the Torah calls the aid Chamas. So Chamas is being used as the archetypical, right, the thief who's getting up to testify is the archetypical Rasha in the world of Edas, and I think that reflects.
You can see the opposite way, that Chamas is this word that's used to describe the archetypical Rasha, and in some cases, associated with that, in some cases associated with false witness.
If someone wanted to get up and say that, I guess, you know, it would be in their constitutional rights. But I wouldn't. What? Yeah, because we have Chamas and Brachos, and everyone's saying Chamas means theft. Chatfin, Gzela. Right? It's like on the other parts of Brachos where they explain what they were doing. I mean, yeah, that's what I would say. If I got Unklus and Rashi on my side, I'm happy. Okay, and then, right, so we see it again in source number 11, which, thanks to Jacob, right, I transposed the numbers here. It was not supposed to be Yirmiyah Yud Aleph Yud Zion. It was supposed to be Yirmiyah Yud Zion Yod. What was going on in Yirmiyah Yud Aleph Yud Zion?
No.
Yeah, nothing. Okay. Yeah, so what does Yirmiyah have to say in Yud Aleph Yud Zion? So, should I have the translation here? Because it's like some comparison, right? It's a comparison to like a bird who's like stealing chicks or something. I don't remember exactly what Kore Dagar Velo Yalet means, but it's like a bird who's taking chicks that he didn't give birth to. Osa Osher Velo Mishpat. So again, right, stealing, that's what the Kore Dagar Velo Yalet is, stealing, is set up as the antithesis to Mishpat. Theft is the opposite of Mishpat. And what does Yirmiyah say? U'achri so, yeah, Naval, right? So the thief is a Naval. In the end, he will be called a Naval. Naval is bad, right? So we've got the Chamson being a Rasha. We've got the Chamson being a Naval, right? So just evidence here for, you know, theft is the epitome of Rasha. And let's keep in mind, let's talk about Nebuchadnezzar in Habakkuk, right? Or Habakkuk is singling out Gneva, as opposed to, you know, some of the other war crimes that maybe you or I would have highlighted instead. Okay, moving on quickly because we don't have so much time. So the relationship between theft and kidnapping. So this is really critical. This is really, really critical. So the eighth commandment in the Ten Commandments is lo tignov, meaning? Okay, so all of a sudden Yonis become our Torah Shebaal Peh translator, right? Lo tignov meaning don't kidnap. So what's the simple interpretation of lo tignov? Don't steal, right? So is it totally irrelevant that in the Ten Commandments, kidnapping is written as don't steal?
What do you mean irrelevant?
Is it just like a coincidence? I have two words that, I have two concepts that use the same word, but there's no relationship between them. Kidnapping...
Is there a better way to say kidnap?
What?
Is there a better way to say kidnap?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe not. So maybe just kidnapping is called Gneva, and stealing money is called Gneva, but they're two different concepts, and really, the Eighth Commandment and the Ten Commandments has absolutely nothing to do with stealing money. That's one totally viable possibility, and in fact, if you ask most people on the street, That's probably what they would say, right? They would say, no, lo tignov is not about stealing, it's about kidnapping, and they have nothing to do with each other. So is that actually likely the case?
Depends how you see, like, what the function of the Ten Commandments are. Are they some like, foundational
probably
text of...
Sounds likely. assuming they're foundational, then what?
Assuming they're foundational, yeah. If we say this language of Gneva and Vela are the things that hold society together, and without them, Mihar is destroyed, and then alluding to that language within the context of the Ten Commandments is definitely important.
Yeah, in other words, I think we're saying the same point here. What's your name, by the way?
Adin.
Nice to meet you. You know what I was going to say? Yeah, in other words, there are stakes here, right? Like, if something gets into the Sarasa Debros, like, that is a big deal. So let's take note. So, I mean, we've got like, three Mepharshim right here on the top. Really, four, because one is Rasad Yagon, backed up by Rav Avraham ben Arambam. Like, Rose like, likes to joke that sometimes Rav Avraham ben Arambam was in Shir when his father was giving Shir, and sometimes he missed Shir that day, and that's how he got a bad shot in the Rambam. But so today is a day where I think Rav Rambam was in Shir, and his father taught him well, and he got a good shot in the pasuk of Lo Tignov. So the little likut they have from Rasad Yagon, right, in the Toras Chaim, so Rasad Yagon translates Lo Tignov as Lo Tersak. So I don't know if one of you guys knows Judeo-Arabic, which I assume this is. I don't know what Lo Tersak means. But they have a little note from Rav and Rambam, and there's actually a sefer which I found, which has the full quote from Rav and Rambam, and from Rasad Yagon. But the bottom line is that Rasag says that ein hamikra yosim midi pshuta. Right, at the end of the day, there is importance to the simple meaning of the text. Right, Yonah is going to throw a party for Rasag after Shir. There is importance to the simple meaning of the text. And what is being included? Why does the Torah tell? What's the point of Lo Tignov? So Rasad Yagon says, even stealing money from the wealthy. What's the point he's trying to get across here? What's the chiddush of stealing money from the wealthy?
They don't need it.
Yeah, they don't need it. In other words, what I have here in a sense, right, like the Robin Hood situation, I have an act of theft without maybe the deleterious impact of theft, right? And a lot of the psukim, and the psukim talk about theft, Oshek especially, they were talking about in the context of the Ani, the Evyon, the Yasam, the Almana, the Ger, right? So what we're saying here is, no, Mikra and Yotzi Dipshuto, any gneva is prohibited. Doesn't matter if it's kidnapping, doesn't matter if it's money, rich, poor, you can't perform stealing. Stealing is an avera, and it sort of gets into the Ten Commandments. Ibn Ezra and Sfarno say this something similar as well, right? They both say that, yeah, gneva refers to kidnapping, gneva refers to stealing. Now, this is not just true in the question of parshanut of biblical commandment number 8. There is a very funny line, which is halacha lemaisa in source number 15. Here the Torah tells us, right, gonev ishumach umcharel, source number 15, v'nim tzavya do mos yumas, right? So if somebody kidnaps someone, and he is found in his possession, he shall surely die. Now, nim tzavya do meaning what? Not nim tzavya do of the original guy, is it? Because he sold him. But nim tzavya do of the second guy, what does that mean? Right? As long as, why do I care whose possession he's in? So nimtza biyado means that the kidnapper took possession of the kidnapping victim and then sold him, right? It's not like I grab him and sell him on the spot. I grab him, bring him into my possession. I forgot to paste the pasuk from Devarim, but you're supposed to use him a little bit. And then you turn around and sell him. Now, this is exactly how Geneva works, right? If you steal something, you are not chayef unless you bring it into your possession. So both the Ramban and the Netziv jump on this. And what they basically say is that even though, right, if you steal an object and you bring it into your possession, that's significant because you now have acquired the object, right? I can acquire physical possession. So if I steal, my water bottle and then I bring it into my possession, I now have stolen the water bottle. There is no Maisa Kinyan on a free Jew, right? I can't steal a person. I can take someone, put them in my trunk, and then drive it into my garage. I haven't performed the Kinyan Chatzer on the victim of the kidnapping. So why does the Torah mandate a Maisa Kinyan on the kidnapping victim if there is no Chalos Kinyan, right? There's no legal efficacy to this Kinyan. Why do you need to bring the person into your possession? So Ramban and Tziv both say, what you have here is you have the procedure of stealing. since kidnapping and stealing conceptually are based on the same model of geneva, so nafkamina is going to be that you have to actually perform a regular act of theft, even though we're talking about kidnapping, where some of the ideas of the act of theft don't make any sense from a legal perspective, right? So this is not just, so kidnapping actually is a form of geneva. Which I think this is essential for, like, you know, leave it up to you guys to, like, flesh out. But, like, if we're going to talk about the stringency of geneva, okay, so first of all, let me just get clear. Part of what's significant about this is we now have on record a geneva with a chiyuv misa. Usually geneva is not chiyuv misa. We now have a case of theft where the, you know, punishment is execution. We'll see coming up next maybe a kind of chiyuv misa for regular geneva. But so that's point number one. We now have a geneva with chiyuv misa. Point number two is I think that kidnapping really gives us a handle on what we look at geneva as. What am I doing when I kidnap someone? Like, why is that so bad?
Kidnapping?
Yeah, it's a bad kidnapping. Let's just formulate it. And then sell them into slavery.
Well, you can't own them.
Yeah, I'm... Not my valid relationship. Ah, right, so the... Nice. It, right? I, it, or... Yeah. So what are we saying here? Kidnapping. Yeah, in other words, I'm taking the person who's an independent entity and I am absorbing him into my own property, right? It's like, like the ultimate negation of his tamalakim is to look at him as just something for me to use for myself.
That's slavery.
What?
Slavery.
Yeah, 100%.
No, I'm saying, like, yeah, but we have a concept of slavery.
We have a concept of slavery, for sure. But and what's interesting is, what's the case where we have the evidivory?
They decide to be
evidivory. Yeah, right? I'm going to argue that it's actually it's a beautiful mita connected mita, punishment for the gav. I don't think it's a coincidence.
But he's still not...
Fair. It's a...
For slavery.
What?
For slavery.
Yeah, fine. Okay. Look... Point is that I understand very well why becoming an evidivory as a ramification for geneva specifically makes a lot of sense. If we're going to say that kidnapping, the problem with kidnapping is I have now attacked this Talmudim and use it for my own, you know, I've made him into my own property. So geneva is just that on a slightly, maybe, but on a lesser scale. It's the same fundamental concept where I now am, instead, I'm not absorbing the person's guf into my rishas. I'm absorbing the person's rechush into my rishas, right? I think that might be also, just 1 second, I think it also might be related to, back to Parshas Bereishis, or Noach, right? The comparison between the theft and the adultery, right? You're attacking the Ishto Kegufo unit and absorbing it into my orbit instead. Right, so if that's what's going on, then I understand the adult relationship. Definitely the kidnapping is kind of highlighting what is so bad about geneva in general. And maybe that is why, right, if we look at geneva and the Teres Adibros as kidnapping, but also as the Avera, which kind of references the broader concept of geneva in general, like, you know, Rasag and Rabban and Rambam and the Sfarim and the Ibn Ezra were saying, I think this approach makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think.
Does it apply to both? Do you get the same punishment for both kidnapping as you and Anandu?
I don't know.
You can never own the evidivory.
Right.
And you said you're denying their tamal kin.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the tamal kin would be applicable to everyone.
For sure. What's the status? So, look at the mechalsin. I'm not sure what the status is. I'm sure it's aser. Is there a chiv misa? I don't know. I don't know.
There are other... Also, with regard to the death penalty, like,
yeah.
Do you consider, like, being tevel, some sort of gazelle that has within an chiyomita, or chiyokaret?
No, because if I, well, maybe, if I eat, it's a good question. I mean, it's machlokas what if I thought that someone who eats truma isn't chayav misa b'dei shamayim, then that wouldn't work. I think it's a machlokas, whether someone who eats truma is a zar. Maybe that's the kol yama. I think it's a machlokas. If someone who eats truma is misa b'dei shamayim. But then you'd have to ask why eating as opposed to just like burning. Like why is someone who burns tevel or truma, like, shouldn't they be stealing as well?
Well, truma has kedusha, that's why it's asked to eat it. But like, if I say shady, you could eat it.
Right, but
you actually separate, so you actually come to separate the truma.
But Adin's all arguing that there's like Gezel HaKohen.
There's Gezel from the Kohen?
Yeah.
From
God?
No, but he might say Shani.
Huh?
You know, well, that's Gezel. He's a Demai, you don't separate, they don't separate Mice or Shani, you just eat them.
So maybe they agree here.
Yeah. I don't know, let's move on just because I'm pressed for a time. Okay, so far we've talked about the number of mitzvos, we've talked about the knases, we've talked about lo signov, kli of misa kind of gneva, and kind of a highlight of what gneva is all about. We've talked about chamas, naval, right, the rush, the ganav as the archetypical rasha. So some of the neviim in sources, I could have quoted ksuvim also, but just, it would have been way too much, so I just tried to focus a bit. Sources 17, 18, 19, 20, all the way through 22. So we've got some really interesting, first of all, comparisons between Gneva and other Averos, and second of all, penalties for Gneva. So look at Pasuk Perek Yudchas. Perek Yudchas in Yechezkel, source number 17. This is it's a classic parakas here, right? Hashem is saying very strongly that, you know, one generation is great, another generation is a disaster, and a third generation is great. So, you know, I don't penalize the sons for the sins of their fathers. But what are the sins that the father did? So he did a lot, right? If you look at source number 17, source psukim, let's say yud through yud gimel. Don't have to list them all off, but you know, al regal achas, what's he doing? He's doing murder, he's doing adultery, he's doing avodah zarah, and he is doing theft, right? He was, let's get them all, shofech dam, this guy is, es eshes re'ehu timei, then we say, ani ve'evyon honag gzelos gazal, and el ha'glulim nasa enough. Okay, so this guy, and, you know, interesting here, ribis. So this guy has violated the big three, and he has violated Gezel, right? Those four are being put together here, right? The big three of murder, adultery, and idolatry is being lumped in with theft. So that's interesting just on its own level, right? Highlighting the stringency of Gneva. And then Pasuk Yochas, when it's time for this guy to get his comeuppance. So what Avera is highlighted when he gets punished? Aviv ki ashak oshek gazal gazal ach asher lo tavasa besochamav hine meis ba'avonav. So this guy just committed murder, adultery, idolatry, and theft. And the pasuk highlights the theft as the one that this guy is punished for. So that's you know, there are three things that are key here. Number one, we're having someone who's being killed by God for theft, right? So theft as itself, as in a sense, a kind of chiyav misa bidei shamayim. Two, we've got theft put in the category of the big three, and three, we've got theft singled out from among the big three, right? All those are going on in these psukim in Yechezkel. You've got more of this going on in source number 18, right? More highlighting Gzela and Oshek in the context of murder. Source number 19, Hosea. We've got theft together with adultery and murder. And then finally, source number 20, right? Yirmiyah says, Haganov Ratzach and Na'of, Veshbeya Shaka Vekatel Abal, right? So here we've got murder, adultery, idolatry, and theft all together in one lump of four Averos. And in Hosea, right? What's happening to these guys? They're getting killed. So, sources number 21, 22, Hashem tells Yirmiyah to tell Malchus Yehuda, if you want to not die, then you know you want to not kill all of you. So stop stealing, and then you will not die. So we've got from these pesukim, Geneva with a kind of chiyav misa b'dei shamayim, and we've got Geneva linked and even highlighted in the big three of Avodah Zarah, Shfichas Damim, and Giloy Arayos. Okay, so that's, I got one more minute, so I'll take that and run with it. If you look in the last parak of Hilchos Geneva, did any of you guys have a chance to see the last parak of Hilchos Geneva in the Rambam? Okay. So if you can open it and just really quickly skim it, right? So the Rambam, master organizer, and he likes putting, if something is at the end and it, he cares putting stuff in the beginning, he cares putting stuff in the end, and he cares putting stuff in the same chapter. So the ninth parak, which is the final parak of Hilchos Geneva, deals with two different mitzvos. Mitzvah number one is, or averos. Aver number one is kidnapping, and aver number two is ba b'machteres, right? The ganav who breaks into your house and you can kill him. I don't have the evidence to prove it all now, but the Rambam seems to think that the ba b'machteres is not just someone you can kill because he's a threat to your life, but you can kill the ba b'machteres because he has a kind of chiyuv misa. In a sense, while he is ba b'machteres, this guy is a chiyuv misa just like anyone else. The most extreme example of this in the Rishonim, actually, Rabbeinu David thinks that if you can kill the Bab Machteres by beheading him, you should do so, because it's a real chiyuv misa, so you should give him like a form of misa's bezel. The Rambam doesn't go quite that far, but what I think he's doing what does kidnapping and Bab Machteres have to do with each other? Nothing really. But he saves those two for the last chapter of Hilchos Geneva to tell you these are the two thieves who are chiyuv misa. And I'm putting at the end to tell you that this should give you a perspective of Geneva across the board, right? Don't think of Geneva as something which is purely monetary, like Rasag was saying in the beginning. Geneva is something that's much more than that on a stringency level, even to the point of having a chiyuve misa in the air. Okay, so just, to sum up, we've got the question of, is Geneva just a, like for Shevas Olam, for peace in the world, and, monetary preservation of property? We're arguing the Torah is taking a different stance, much more fierce against it. We had the dozen mitzvos we came up of Geneva. We had the multiple kenasim that are going on in Geneva. The ganav is the rasha. The ganav is chayiv misa. The ganav and the kidnapper. The ganav and the eich hamas. And finally, the ganav kidnapper bab machteres, kind of giving us our perspective of theft in general. So let's stop the recording here. And okay.